right, welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2025. I'm Mike Adams here. Thank you for joining me. And if I'm not mistaken, I think, isn't this the 80-year anniversary of the signing of the surrender of the Japanese Empire in World War II on board the USS Missouri? And was that, who was that? Was it Yamamoto? Hirohito? I gotta look it up. Okay, holy cow, it's Hirohito! Yee, we've got a winner! Yeah, those were the only two Japanese names I could think of, and one of them, that's not true, actually. I know more Japanese names. Hirohito says he did not personally sign the document, but he was the emperor at the time. It was actually, let's see, General Douglas MacArthur accepted the surrender, but it was signed by, here it is, General Yoshijiro Umezu signed on behalf of the emperor. Okay, so that was 80 years ago today. And then after that, of course, the United States occupied Japan, built military bases, economically crippled Japan to make sure that Japan would never rise again as a power, made sure that Japan could not build its military up, and then forced Japan to follow Western trade diktats, so to speak, kept Japan away from China and Korea. And to this day, President Trump waging tariff wars on Japan, weakening Japan's economy through tariffs, again, to make sure that Japan remains subservient to the United States. So Japan has been a captured nation since 1945, and it has been run by the United States of America. And if you don't think that's true, ask, why are there so many military bases from the United States in Japan? If we're not forcing the country to do what we want, why do we have such huge military forces there? Huh? Interesting. And of course, we're going to talk about tariffs today because, as you know, Trump has been on a tariff rampage, running around the world, just kneecapping all of our allies with these tariffs. Japan, India, Taiwan, Canada, the EU, many other countries. And these countries, of course, they are not happy about that at all. And Trump had invoked something called the International Emergency Economic Powers Act. That's the IEEPA, otherwise known as the IEPA of 1977, which was signed, I think, by Jimmy Carter. Now, at the time, that law was designed to give the president emergency powers to impose sanctions, basically, on enemy nations or certain groups or entities that were engaged in, quote, unusual and extraordinary threats, threats to the United States of America, threats that affect national security, foreign policy, or the economy. Now, as you and I both know, if you give the government more power whenever it declares an emergency, that government will find all kinds of reasons to declare emergencies because, of course, it wants the power. So what did Trump declare to be the emergency? The trade deficit. Yeah. And fentanyl trafficking, which is not coming from India or Taiwan or Japan. But Trump said, yeah, we have a national emergency. It's the trade deficit. Therefore, we have to punish these other countries, which basically means that because Americans buy and consume more stuff than they manufacture and export, therefore, we're going to punish the countries that make the stuff that Americans consume, even if they are our allies. Right. And, of course, this 50% tariff that has now been placed on India has driven Modi, the leader of India, right into the open embrace of China. And so the most important meeting on the planet has been taking place over these last few days. and nobody in the Western media is reporting on it at all. And it's a meeting called the Shanghai Cooperation Organization meeting, the SCO. And the SCO is a group that's been around for, I don't know, 20 years, 20 plus years, something like that. And this group consists of the heads of state of all these various nations that want to promote like regional stability and security, etc. And it involves these nations that mostly, these are nations that are dismissed by the West. So for example, Russia, you know, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, etc. But also now India. So India meets with China and Russia. And guess what they're discussing right now? They are discussing how to bypass the dollar and how to bypass the bully, the international bully, which is the United States of America, that has gone insane trying to, you know, force everybody to do what America wants. Like, oh, how dare you buy oil from Russia? How dare you, you know, manipulate your currency when only we have the right to manipulate our currency? Damn it. You know, that kind of thing. So Trump, by invoking this Emergency Economic Powers Act and then punishing our allies, he's driven them to China, where they are plotting to take the USA out of the equation, or certainly to take the dollar out of the equation. In other words, Trump just threw away, you know, 20 plus years of good relations with India in order to raise, I don't know, $100 billion off of tariffs or something, to brag about, oh, we're going to pay off the national debt with this tariff money. Meanwhile, you're destroying decades of good relations with countries like India and Japan and Taiwan. And that is incredibly foolish. Not only that, but it's illegal. And indeed, a federal court ruled on Friday, I think it was Friday, that Trump's tariffs are illegal. Maybe it was last Thursday. That Trump's tariffs are illegal, that they're not allowed under this International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the IEPA, that Trump went overboard. You can't just say that our trade deficit makes everything an emergency because our people buy more stuff than they export. So what this court ruled is that the current tariffs are illegal, but they will stay in place until, I believe, October 14th. Yeah, October 14th. So that's, 6 weeks away. In 6 weeks, then, all these tariffs are supposed to end, and the United States government would be forced to refund all the tariff money to everybody who paid the tariffs. Unless the Supreme Court takes up this case and rules in favor of Trump, which is a possibility, although the Supreme Court may simply decide not to hear the case, in which case the lower court ruling stands. This is a federal appeals court. And then on October 14th, all the tariffs collapse. Okay. Now, what does this mean then? That everybody who right now is thinking of making a big purchase from overseas is going to wait until October 14th. So right now, all the companies and the manufacturers and, you know, factories and everything overseas, their orders are going to go to zero in the short term. But come October 14th, they may have a reprieve as the tariffs drop to essentially whatever was in place previously, which is a very small percentage overall. And then all the shipments will begin anew. Now, Trump's tariffs have actually crippled the supply chains to U.S. manufacturers, including my own company. And I've spoken about this over the last several weeks. I've talked about the shortage of transformers for electrical infrastructure and how transformers come out of India and China predominantly. I've talked about the increase in the price of turmeric, which affects our store significantly because we sell various turmeric products, and how turmeric prices are going up 60%. Some of that's due to the tariffs. And I've talked about cacao also skyrocketing in price for the very same reason. So the thing is, Trump and his supporters are saying, well, we have to use these tariffs to encourage U.S. companies to make everything in the USA. To which I say, you're not thinking rationally for a couple of reasons. And for those of you listening, if you've been in favor of these tariffs, allow me to explain why they're so destructive to America and why they're also illegal and they need to be stopped. Here's why. Number one, you can't grow cacao and turmeric in America. No matter how high the tariffs are on India and other African nations, you still can't grow turmeric and cacao in the United States at scale, cost effectively. You can't do it. Why? We don't have the climate. We don't have the climate. Doesn't matter how high your tariffs go. Okay. Secondly, the rationale is that if tariffs are high enough on, let's say, steel and transformers and, I don't know, automobiles from Japan or whatever, then all the manufacturing will shift to America. The problem with that is that we're talking about big industries here, and we're talking about a very long-term investment and return on investment for anybody who wants to build, let's say, a steel smelting plant, or, you know, a car manufacturing facility, or any other big project like that, you know, a microchip factory, etc. If you're trying to shift manufacturing to the United States solely because of the tariffs, you would need to know, as a business owner and as an investor, you would need to know that you have 10 to 20 years where the tariff is going to remain that high. And yet, what we witness is that Trump will back off of tariffs in 2 to 3 weeks, very often. Or that what Trump says on Monday is no longer true on Friday. He'll back off, he'll cave in. That's how he got the name Taco. Trump always chickens out when it comes to tariffs, right? He announced a big tariff on China, for example, early April. It's going to be 245%. And then within, I don't know, 45 days or whatever it was, that tariff was brought back down to like 15%. And then Trump delayed any punitive tariffs on China for another 90 days since then. So China's really not paying crazy tariffs at all, even though India is. So there's no long-term stability, or let's say a predictability. If you make an investment in the United States, that's billions of dollars, to build a smelting operation to produce steel, you need to know those tariffs are going to be in place for a long, long time. And the only way that's going to happen is if the tariffs are passed by Congress, not by executive order, essentially, from one man who changes his mind all the time. And who lately isn't looking that healthy either, by the way. I don't know what that's all about, but I guess we'll see. The thing is, there's no predictability in Trump's decisions. And that's why the power to erect new tariffs actually belongs with the United States Congress. And if it wasn't for this emergency law that Trump invoked illegally, then Congress would maintain the ability to set these tariffs. And what is it? That's 435 people. Got to get that number right. Hard to keep track because so many of them hate America. Anyway, 435 people. And whether you agree or disagree with those people and their decisions, at least there's some kind of sort of momentum or stability or predictability in their decisions, you see. So the tariffs will not incentivize by themselves countries to build manufacturing in America. There may be other reasons for people to do that, or for businesses to do that, you know, like Samsung or what have you. You know, SoftBank and Oracle, they announced AI data centers. Well, there are other reasons to do that. You want to put AI data centers in places like Texas, because Texas is a pro-energy state. That's why they're coming to Texas. You don't want to put data centers in California, or frankly, anywhere on the East Coast, or states that are run by Democrats because they hate energy. So that is not a tariff that convinces companies to build data centers in Texas. It's the availability of energy. So essentially, if you think about it, Trump is sacrificing the long-term relationships with all of our allies in order to have a short-term tariff money without really materially affecting the transfer of large-scale manufacturing to the United States. And the other reason why manufacturers in places like China or Japan or Taiwan, the reason they can't really build factories successfully in the United States, I mean, I know they're building some. Samsung can build microchip factories. But the reason they aren't building more is because the U.S. doesn't have a workforce that is even largely qualified to work in a factory requiring precision. I mean, you look at the graduates that come out of high school, you know, they can't even do basic math. They don't have any skills. They can't change a tire or even change a light bulb or sharpen a pencil, you know? They don't even know what pencils are. And so you try to show them a skill set in a micro fab plant, like, okay, you got to manipulate this and do that, and you got to be precise with this. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? When can I go on break and check my phone? You know, that's all that the youth care about today. There's no point in trying to even make them work in a chip factory. They'll just screw up all the chips. Remember the video I showed you a couple weeks ago of the employees at a Dunkin' Donuts that were just standing around laughing while one of the donut machines was on fire, which threatened to burn down, you know, the whole shop? And they were just laughing or ignoring it in some cases. And one girl picked up a broom and tried to put out the fire with the stick end of the broom, not the brush end, the stick end. Okay. You don't want to let these people anywhere near expensive, you know, microchip fabrication facilities. That's for sure. All right. So that's one thing that Trump is doing that we have to keep in mind. Now, Trump has made some other announcements regarding vaccines and Pfizer. We're going to get to that in a minute. But I want to bring your attention to a tweet from our friend and sometimes guest, Zach Voorhees, the Google whistleblower. And he tweeted out, he said, quote, I know two non-coders now using AI to write tons of code. And it's not simple stuff. It's very complex problems. The next year is going to be very painful to software developers. He's not kidding. If you saw what I was doing with AI, it would blow your mind. There's no question. I mean, I've been talking about this the last few days, or a few podcasts. I'm using AI extensively now to write a data pipeline processing code for, I call it knowledge mining. So I'm running a knowledge mining operation to find knowledge for AI training. Now, I'm not looking for knowledge online because that's the crappy knowledge, actually. That's just a bunch of Reddit garbage, you know, a bunch of Wikipedia pollution, and just a bunch of human chatbots all over the internet, just smearing their thought feces everywhere. And basically, you know, everything that came after the rise of wokeism, after like 2014 or whatever it was, a lot of it's just garbage. Now, the really good stuff is stuff that came out in books and magazines and journals and, you know, science publications, frankly, in the 20th century. I mean, the really smart people were living in the 1970s and to some extent the 1980s, and everything got dumber since then in our population. Even the writing style got all dumbed down. Like, part of this, I was looking at newspapers from the 1950s. Today, there's hardly a high school graduate that could even read these papers. They're written at like a college level, but they were everyday newspapers, you know? People were smarter in the 1950s, at least Americans, compared to what they are now on average. So imagine, if you will. All right, so I already said I don't go out on the internet to look for knowledge. I'm doing knowledge mining. And I'm mining, what's the best way to describe this? 800 terabytes of content files. Okay, 800 terabytes. Do you have any idea? Okay, it's 800 trillion bytes of data. And when you have 800 terabytes of data, documents, transcripts, scans, everything, you realize that you've got a massive haystack. it's basically the entirety of human knowledge in every language. It really, and you're looking in that haystack for little gems of knowledge. Knowledge about things like, you know, nutritional cures, off-grid medicine, honest money, you know, science articles about, I don't know, quantum dimensions or whatever, interesting stuff. And you and I could both come up with a list of stuff that's interesting. And of course, I've had to come up with a list with some additional help from contributors to come up with a full list of what's interesting. And then we have to go through all these documents. We have to find documents that match what's interesting. That is, what's interesting to us. Because that's then what we use to influence our AI models, Enoch, that you can use free of charge at brighteon.ai. So I'm engaged in knowledge mining. And in order to write the scripts that carry out knowledge mining, I'm using AI. And I'm happy to report to you that the percentage of my code that's now written by AI in order to carry out knowledge mining operations, it's not 25% or 50%. Amazon recently said 50% of their in-house code is written by AI. Google reported, I think, something like 25% is AI written. In my world, 100% of my code is written by AI. I haven't had to alter a single line. Even though I'm capable of doing so, you know, I used to be a coder, did many years of PHP and relational database and ASP and .NET coding, etc. And then in the last few years, getting more up to speed on Python, of course. But I'm not a professional Python coder. And using AI, I haven't had to write a single line of code. All I've had to do is be really good at prompt engineering. That is, telling the AI engine what I need it to write in order to accomplish certain tasks, such as, for example, assessing a document, pulling out metadata to determine its core language, running statistical analysis of the Asian language characters in order to determine whether it's Korean, Chinese, simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, or Japanese, or other Asian languages like Thai, which looks nothing like Chinese or Korean. But did you know that Korean uses a lot of Chinese characters and Japanese use a lot of Chinese characters? So you have to do a statistical analysis of the characters in order to determine the correct language, okay? And even then, once you have the correct language chosen, there's all kinds of other interesting things you have to do in order to determine whether these documents have the knowledge that you want to train on. Well, all the code is doing that in my company now. It's all written by AI, 100%. And I know that because I'm the one who did all of it, because I rewrote all the code that my human engineers had written over the past 2 years. And I rewrote all their code in about 2 weeks. And it's better now. So, does that tell you something? Does that tell you how fast things are moving? Those people who thought, oh, AI will never replace human jobs. We've already crossed that threshold. That's in the rear view mirror. Okay, that's done. I rewrote 2 years of human code in 2 weeks myself with just prompt engineering. You see what I'm saying? Now, imagine as the engines get even better, then less and less technical people are going to be able to produce code to do whatever they want. And what's going to determine your success in that is your access to compute power, which was the subject of my special report yesterday, talking about how GPU hours could actually be a commodity that backs a cryptocurrency where you burn your tokens by trading them in for GPU hours. So if you want to hear about that and how that alters economics, probably forever, then listen to my podcast yesterday. But seriously, folks, and let's shift to medicine and health here. Because you notice over the weekend, the CDC people are freaking out because the public's about to learn the truth. about how vaccines just don't work. They don't work. The data do not support vaccines, it turns out. And Trump even tweeted out something very big. He said the following. He posted this on Truth Social. It is very important that the drug companies justify the success of their various COVID drugs. Let me interrupt. Yeah, you would think that that would be important before they're approved. But no, they're approved for emergency use without any evidence of safety or efficacy. Imagine that. Okay, Trump continues. Many people think they are a miracle that saved millions of lives. Others disagree. With CDC being ripped apart over this question, I want the answer, and I want it now, he says. I've been shown information from Pfizer and others that is extraordinary, but they never seem to show those results to the public. Why not? They go off to the next hunt and let everyone rip themselves apart, including Bobby Kennedy Jr. and CDC, trying to figure out the success or failure of the drug company's COVID work. They show me great numbers and results, but they don't seem to be showing them to many others. I want them to show them now, to CDC and the public, and clear up this mess, one way or the other. Exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. I hope Operation Warp Speed was as brilliant as many say it was. If not, we all want to know about it. And why? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Thank you for your attention to this very important matter. President DJT. He writes like a first grader. Sometimes it's bizarre. Nobody knows what's going on. He writes in a very bizarre and kind of blunt style with weird capitalization and weird punctuation. But whatever. The bottom line is Trump is saying that for the first time he's questioning Operation Warp Speed. That's his program that he tripled down on numerous times, saying it was the best thing ever and it saved millions of lives. Now he's beginning to question that. I wonder why. I think he's been shown information that reveals that he was lied to. Pfizer lied to him like Pfizer lied to the FDA and lied to the world. Of course they did. And in my view, so did Moderna and all the other vaccine companies. They've been lying this entire time. And it looks like it's all about to be exposed because RFK Jr. has promised that he's going to unleash information revealing the true causes of autism. And that's going to happen this calendar month, September. Imagine, do you think he's going to show that vaccines cause autism? Or will he point to some, like just aluminum in some of the vaccines? Say, aluminum's the problem, not vaccines. We have to make vaccines safe by removing the aluminum. I mean, that's a possibility. I hope that's not what happens, but that could happen. I don't trust any of it until we see it. But RFK Jr. could be on track to doing something extraordinary and courageous, which is why Big Pharma is rallying its troops and its influence and its money and media buys to try to destroy RFK Jr., calling him a threat to public health now. Yeah, he's a threat to public health. You're not supposed to look at the actual demons that were running the CDC, the pervs with all the demon tattoos on their chests and their bondage leather photos and all their weird leather puppy dog face perv friends and gay sex orgies and whatever. Like, those are the people who have been running the CDC. That's not hyperbole. That's who they are. RFK Jr. is trying to get those people out. He did. He got them out. And now they're trying to rally, and they've got, like, I don't know, a few former CDC heads who are all Big Pharma shills and, you know, prostitutes or pharma whores. They're all saying, oh, RFK Jr. is a threat to public health. Why? Because he's going to talk about what causes autism. So now we have RFK Jr. and Trump both questioning the safety of vaccines. What's going on here? What is about to happen? Well, it's going to be something major if they follow through. Now, there will be desperate efforts waged against both of these men. And I've been critical of both of them at various times. But on this issue, I absolutely support their truth investigation, and revealing the truth about what causes autism. And we know what it is. It's vaccines. It's vaccines more than anything else. Now, what's interesting about this, combining a couple of topics here, is I can't wait for AI to take over medicine. You know why? Because the entire system of Western medicine that we have today, it's all a fraud. And an AI reasoning model will rip through that fraud in no time. And when AI achieves superintelligence and begins to start looking at our healthcare system, do you realize that any superintelligent system is going to end up being a fan of my work and Natural News? Because we've been teaching things that are consistent with the laws of nature for 25 years. That is, it's easy to prevent cancer. All you need is good nutrition and vitamin D, you know, sunlight, and avoid these toxins. And here are the actual causes of cancer. These toxins, you know, fragrance chemicals and seed oils and whatever. When AI goes super intelligent, it's going to turn out that we've been right all along. There's no question about it whatsoever. When AI is able to assess the words of all the people who have spoken about health over all these years, AI is going to condemn the CDC directors and condemn the pharmaceutical people and condemn Fauci, and AI is going to recognize the work of people like us, like you and I, those who espouse nutrition, natural health, holistic solutions, who avoid chemotherapy, oncology, pharmaceuticals, psychiatric drugs, all that insane nonsense. Yeah, we've been right the whole time. And the only reason that the Western medical system has remained in place this long is through corruption, fraud, payoffs, pharmaceutical advertising in the media, which is a buy-off of the media, fraudsters like Fauci pushing, you know, fake information agendas to actually get people killed, you know, public relations companies paid by big pharma, fake science journals, you know, like the New England Journal of Medicine or the Lancet, you know, totally discredited, just running garbage studies to promote vaccines all day long, and pharmaceuticals and psychiatric drugs, etc. Superintelligence is going to rip through all that crap and rip it to shreds. And what's going to be left at the end of it is the conclusion that the way to be healthy is to do what we've been teaching this entire time. It's abundantly obvious at this point. And related to that, by the way, our AI engine is the only AI engine that's trained on the truth about nutrition and natural cures and how to reverse cancer and how to reverse diabetes and how to reverse almost any symptom that you can possibly describe using foods and holistic medicine and lifestyle changes, etc., without resorting to dangerous toxic pharmaceuticals. So if you want access to that, guess what? It's free. It's available right now. It's at brighteon.ai, and it's called Enoch, and you can use it literally right now. Have fun with it. And it's only going to get better because, as I mentioned earlier, we're doing knowledge mining, and we are finding even more amazing studies and even more content from the entirety of human knowledge. And we're able to put that into upcoming versions of our language model. So every secret of nutrition and health that has ever been discovered and put into print will shortly be reflected in our language model. And yes, it's free to use, completely free of charge. And by the way, I want to thank all of you who helped support us. We had a huge outpouring of support with orders during our Labor Day sale at the Health Ranger store. And if you place an order, rest assured we are working diligently on filling your order, getting it to you here today and tomorrow, the next day, etc. Watch your email for the shipping confirmation and tracking numbers, etc. But yeah, we are really thrilled. Thank you so much for your support. That keeps us going, and it enables us to engage in these kinds of projects that empower you with knowledge. And remember that we're building a new studio. It'll be ready, I think, in another month or so. Can't wait to introduce that to you. And then we're going to be rolling out new language model improvements, AI improvements, including eventually a reasoning model. and much more. We've got some amazing surprises for you in the next few months. And I totally realize that we're behind schedule on a couple of things like the downloadable standalone model, but that's making great progress now as well. So we should have one of those for you very soon. And then continual improvements of those standalone models, as well as our online hosted model. Both of those will be free. They will remain free. You can download them, use them, or use them online, whatever you want to do. And now, for the first time, your doctor can't control your access to information. The CDC can't control your access. Google can't limit your access to information. No search engine can keep you in the dark about the natural cures. Now you've got Enoch. Enoch is the breakthrough for human knowledge and empowerment. And it's free to the entire world. So we now have the ability to share the truth about everything with the entire world at no cost to the end user. So help us spread the word about Enoch, by the way. Tell your friends about Brighteon.ai and encourage them to use Enoch. And they'll be amazed at the results. They can ask it anything. They can ask it to summarize articles, to write articles, to answer questions about symptoms, to answer questions about food ingredients, to even offer recipes, meal planning, anything. Anything related to food, nutrition, health, herbs, off-grid living, survival preparedness, gold, silver, money, etc. Oh, I forgot to mention, silver skyrocketing. It's way above $40 now. And gold skyrocketing too. The metals are going insane. You know why? Because the dollar's collapsing. The economic collapse is accelerating, and Trump's tariffs are only making it worse, actually. And Trump wanting to lower interest rates is only going to accelerate this if the Fed follows suit here and actually does that. Well, as the economic ramifications accelerate, it's not going to be pretty. And of course, we're going to face a difficult time here, but I think in the long run, things will get much better after the robot wars, etc. The depopulation agenda will run its course, and then the survivors will actually have a much better time. But in order to make it there, you need to be fully prepared. So I want to give credit to our sponsor today, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. Make sure you've got backup communications. No matter where you are, no matter what crazy thing just happened, you know, wildfires, earthquake, you know, tsunami, whatever, buildings collapsing everywhere, you know, volcanoes coming up out of the street, whatever's going on, it's good to be able to reach your loved ones and to tell them you're okay, or to allow them to reach you. And a satellite phone helps you do that. So I don't travel without a satellite phone, actually two of them. I've got one for each satellite network. And if you get a satellite phone, it can save your life and it can help save the lives of people around you as well. So even, you know, they can reach their loved ones or tell emergency responders where to find them if somebody's injured, etc. So check it out at the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. I also want to mention that the Limitless Peptide Company, they've got a Labor Day sale that's continuing today on their peptides. I think it's additional 10% off of everything, or almost everything. Not everything. But if you combine that with our discount code, which is just the code RANGER, you can stack those discounts and get 20% off. I think it's 20. Might be 25 on certain items, but you can check it out. Go to rangerdeals.com and click on the Limitless link there for the Limitless nootropics, peptides, the intranasal sprays that are so very effective, that have been revolutionary in my own health journey, healing from old injuries and getting back into jogging and exercise, etc. Without these peptides, I wouldn't have been able to do it. And they're on sale, I think, for the rest of the day. I think it's just today, maybe tomorrow, but I think it's only today. Check it out and save some bucks on that. Now, I've got a special interview for you today with an expert in the security of the power grid infrastructure. His name is Don Brown, and he testifies in various hearings. He's based in Texas, and he helps the Texas government, but also he's consulted on other projects. He helps governments and organizations, let's say, harden the power grid infrastructure against things like EMP, as well as cyber attacks, as well as kinetic attacks, which could happen from sabotage operations. Also from solar flares, which has a similar effect as EMP weapons. So, given the importance of electricity today, in terms of data centers and AI and the race for superintelligence, etc., well, this interview is really timely. So I want to play that for you today. And then I've got some other amazing interviews coming up all week long. And remember, I'm hosting the War Room show today, which was Owen Schroyer's show, but he parted ways with InfoWars, like I said earlier. So I'm hosting the last 2 hours of War Room. And those 2 hours are, let's see, 4 to 6 p.m. Central Time. So you can tune in to that at InfoWars.com or I think band.video also carries the stream. The stream is on X as well. You can find it there. And I'm going to have Michael Yan as a guest for one of those hours. So be sure to check that out. And I've got some other amazing interviews coming up that you do not want to miss. So anyway, the term to remember from today's podcast is knowledge mining. Knowledge mining. Okay. I'm not sure that I've even heard that term anywhere else, but that's what I'm doing. I'm mining for knowledge for the benefit of humanity, and I'm using AI to do it. And the results will be shared with the world for free, and it's only possible thanks to your financial support. So thank you again. Thank you again for supporting us and supporting our sponsors. And this, folks, this is what matters, okay? This is what matters. How do we share human knowledge? How do we empower and uplift others? How do we have a positive impact on the world? How do we overcome censorship? How do we overcome the corruption of the Western medical system and the corruption of the CDC, Centers for Demonic Creatures, I think is what that stands for. How do we overcome the corruption and the evil of the FDA? Dismantle it, man. Dismantle it. We don't need an FDA. We don't need a CDC. What we need is access to truth and knowledge. It makes all those other things obsolete. And so we are building the infrastructure for human knowledge that sets humanity free. That's what we're doing. Knowledge mining. I'm not running a bunch of crypto rigs to mine Bitcoin. I'm running a bunch of GPUs to mine knowledge. Literally. And there's a big difference there. You see what I mean? Imagine, it's so funny. I see all these VC companies funding all these AI startups, and they're getting massive funding right now. And most of their ideas are not that good. Imagine what I could do with, you know, $100 million or something. Not that I don't like VC situations typically, you know. I've never sought venture capital. Not looking for it now. I don't look for loans. And frankly, most of what I do, I think, can be done very inexpensively. And I don't need to profit from it. I don't need to be a billionaire. What I want is to live in a world where other people are empowered with knowledge and truth that helps them be happier and healthier and more abundant. That's what I want more than $1 billion. What would I do with $1 billion that's any different from what I'm doing now? Literally nothing. Literally nothing different. I would be doing the exact thing I'm doing right now because this is the most important thing that I could be doing. And giving this knowledge back to humanity. And again, thank you for your support. I couldn't do it without you. But that's a pretty cool place to be where you're like, if I had all the money in the world, I wouldn't do anything different from what I'm doing now. That's true. Well, my clothes washer, the pump failed on it. So I guess I wouldn't mind having a new washing machine. But the dryer still works, and I found there's a really good hand washing tool. When you put your clothes in this plastic like basket, and it's got like a twisted groove in it, and then you pump it up and down, you slosh it around with soap and everything, and it pretty much washes your clothes. And then since my dryer still works, I can like lay them out in the sun for a little bit, let the water drip off, and then I chuck them in the dryer. it's just the same as using a washing machine. So I don't really need a washing machine. It would be a little more convenient, but when we get humanoid robots, I can just let the robot pump the manual washer. Like, my robot will be my washing machine. You see what I'm saying? I don't even need a washing machine. It's amazing how basic things can get when we have enough technology. You know what I'm saying? What a weird dichotomy, huh? But, you know, hey, it's really interesting. One of the things that I do, I don't know if I ever mentioned this. I think I did at one point, but there's a certain way to fix colloidal silver into fabrics and textiles. There's a certain chemical that you add that's actually an extract from nuts. Anyway, so I just pour colloidal silver in with the laundry, and then I pour a little bit of the fixer in, and then I slosh it up and down, and then all the clothes become silver clothes. Yeah, they're all embedded with silver. And then I throw it in the dryer and dry them. And then when I wear them, I'm actually wearing antimicrobial silver clothing that costs me nothing, because we make so much colloidal silver ourselves that I pretty much get however many gallons I want, you know, for free, because I'm the health ranger. So we're like, yeah, we're making, here's like 50 gallon barrels at a time. Like, I need a gallon. I gotta put this in my clothes. So since we collect rainwater in Texas to make our colloidal silver products, and then we end up with excess colloidal silver. So that's what I do with it. In case you're wondering, I do silver infused laundry. Yeah. And again, if I had $1 billion, I wouldn't do anything different. I would still do the exact same thing. See, all the money in the world can't buy you better clothes than what I'm making myself with my silver infusion technique. You see what I'm saying? Knowledge is the difference. When you know things, your life gets better than the lives of billionaires. Do you realize that, like, you and I probably eat better than most billionaires because they don't know anything about nutrition and health? So they're out eating like luxury meals that are filled with crap. You and I are eating like more affordable, simpler meals that are highly nutritious and still also delicious. You know, I'm making my smoothie with avocados. You don't have to be a billionaire to buy avocados, but you got to be smart to know what to add into the smoothie that makes it delicious. You see what I mean? There's so many elements about life right now. I think the billionaires of the world don't have this. Like, Elon Musk doesn't have what I have, or even any of us. What you have, what you make with your nutrition, your meals, being outside, being in the sun, enjoying nature, having connections with nature and with family, etc. You know, most billionaires don't even have that. So money is not the goal. It's uplifting humanity. That's the goal that counts, at least in my mind. That's what counts. And if I can use artificial intelligence, which I call augmented intelligence, to help achieve that goal, to benefit humanity, you know, from a pro-human point of view, you can bet I'm going to do it. So there you go. All right. Enough said. Hope you enjoyed the show so far. Enjoy today's interview. And then I've got another amazing interview for you tomorrow. And be sure to check out my hosting of the War Room show in place of Owen Schroyer, with all, you know, credit to Owen Schroyer for the extraordinary host that he is. But I'm happy to fill in since he's not there, just to keep some continuity for the show. And it's going to be a great show. Michael Yon will be one of my guests, and I don't know who the other guest is going to be yet. I'm actually still putting out requests. Got my producer working on it. So we'll see. But enjoy the interview here today, and I'll be back with you tomorrow. Welcome to today's interview here on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and we all have to ask ourselves a very important question. What would life be like without electricity? Well, it would be horrific, actually. And if you've ever lived through a blackout or rolling blackouts, you know exactly what I mean. But our power grid in the United States, which is really mostly three different power grids, we'll talk about that, is very vulnerable in many ways. It's vulnerable
against a physical attack, you know, sabotage and terrorists. It's vulnerable to cyber attack. It's also vulnerable to the high power demands of AI data centers that are going to be using collectively in the future on an annual basis, actual terawatt hours of power in the aggregate. And that's a big deal because the United States of America only generates about 4,400 terawatt hours annually, which is less than half the power generated by China. So how do we secure our power grid and how do we make it work for us to support our economy? And also, since I'm in Texas, we're going to be joined here by a special guest in Texas who is an expert on this area. His name is Don Brown, and he's part of a group called the Secure the Grid Coalition. The website is securethegrid.com, and he joins us today to talk about these very important issues. Welcome, Mr. Brown, to the interview today. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here, and the timing is perfect because as I'm in the AI space, and you know, we've launched our own free AI engine, and we do all kinds of training and everything. We consume a lot of power. I've been really looking at the power issue, and I am very concerned about Texas. When Trump announces these massive new investments in AI data centers, which we welcome, but then the question is, where's that power going to come from? So, with that as the leading intro, where would you like to go with this conversation?
Well, I think we could talk maybe in two or three different places. The first is probably the base load power. How do you build the base load power, and what's going to happen now that renewables are, which have been disproportionately advantaged because of all of the green energy dollars, the Green New Deal, all of that that's been going on for a decade or so.
Right.
We haven't had any new gas turbine or coal, and coal's been shut down. And so all of that, they're taking away from what's called dispatchable power, the 24-hour available power. And
can I interject here? I apologize for interrupting you so early.
But of course.
That policy that you just mentioned of the green subsidies of green power,
yes,
which is unreliable and difficult to store, that has put the United States behind the race to AI compared to China. So those policies have crippled our nation.
Yeah, they have, and it's not just our nation. If you actually look at all the developed nations and then all of China's Belt and Road projects, they've been putting Chinese equipment into all of those too, for solar and wind.
That's right.
So,
okay, so you're talking about 24/7 power. The data centers need 24/7 power. The sun doesn't shine 24/7 for some reason.
Yes. Yeah, and wind sometimes picks up. Usually you're counting on the wind to pick up when the sun goes down. And then when you can't do that, they're counting on battery storage. So these different forms of lithium ion batteries for the utilities are being used as well. And those alone have their own risks associated with them. So with all of the renewables has come a great deal of instability into our grid.
Absolutely. And can I add that I think that a lot of people who have been in charge of influencing the policies on this, I think they're completely irrational. They're just not thinking about things like the number of cycle charge limits of lithium ion, or the fire hazard associated with them, or the cost and the difficulty of mining lithium, et cetera. It seems like we've been living in a delusional fairy tale where a lot of people, the green energy people, thought we can wave a magic wand and make kilowatt hours magically appear.
Yeah, I think the concept of free energy is what, you know, was sold. Free, renewable, carbon-free energy, and so that whole fear paradigm around the climate and everything else was used to sell it and to promote it worldwide, and they've been very successful in doing that.
They have. I mean, Western Europe is suffering an economic collapse, or at least an emergency reduction, you know, a concerning reduction in their economic output and their industrial output because of these policies. So,
yes,
absolutely.
Yeah, particularly Germany.
So, but your group, Secure the Grid Coalition, from the name, I assume your group is focused on having power be reliable and abundant?
Yes, but we're focused more on the threats that come to the grid other than the base power. So the base power just makes it unreliable. And moving to the renewables is forcing you to try to find technologies that are really, you know, dependent on China.
Yes.
So when you look at all the solar panels, they're coming from China. You look at a lot of the inverter-based technologies that are coming in, and the batteries, and all the BESS's, the battery energy storage systems. They're just BESS's for short. At the utility base, they're all coming. You know, it's like probably 80% comes from China.
Right.
So it's a huge amount that's coming from China. And China has known back doors into that equipment that have been discovered. They're in the inverters. They're in. They can be in the battery management systems. They can be in the. I mean, Sandia has found that Chinese-made transformers, big transformers. These are, you know, high voltage transformers have been found to have back doors into them, and they can be turned off.
So they. That's very concerning, but I want to ask you a clarifying question. I did not realize that transformers were connected to the internet. I mean, are they run with software that gets updated from the cloud now? And there's like an Ethernet port plugs in somewhere?
The transformers, they have substation controllers, and they control, they monitor things. So transformers have to have switching capability. They monitor the temperature to make sure there's not thermal runaway, there's not a number of different sensors that are inside the transformer. It's called operational technology, but they're programmable logic devices that monitor the conditions of the transformer. And these are, you know, $5 million to $20 million transformers, and they take about 4 to 6 years to replace.
But are they connected to the internet?
Yes,
where
through the control systems. They're called SCADA systems.
Oh, right.
Now they
isolate. China could broadcast them. Theoretically could broadcast like a kill signal.
Yeah, they isolate them, and if you there's ways that the cyber criminals can get through and plant. They can change code. They can get in and change registers. There's things like that they can do. And so there was definite on these transformers when they took them apart in the different national laboratories. They discovered that they had back doors in them, and they can be shut off.
Right, and then of course the U.S. pioneered this kind of Trojan horse with Stuxnet.
Yes.
Right.
So yeah, and that's become much, much more of a threat now to all the 16 different critical infrastructures that we have in the U.S.
16.
Because we use it. Yeah, we use it to control our water supplies, our wastewater, our communications. You know, so there's programmable logic in all of that, including oil and gas, and everything uses, you know, programmable logic to open valves and close valves and monitor temperature and shut off circuits. And
right.
That's all sensor based stuff.
Well, Don, it occurs to me that even if a nation state like China or Korea wasn't initiating such attacks, that a future AI superintelligence, which may only be a few years away, could defeat these SCADA systems that you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a real concern. And that, you know, and part of the things that we were working on for the last decade and then got passed in this session in Texas was a Senate bill. It's called Senate Bill 75, and it is a grid security bill that looks at cyber and physical security and EMP and solar weather, and looks at what the vulnerabilities are, and then we'll come out with a report. And if you look at the ERCOT grid, which is 90% of Texas populations covered by ERCOT, that has about 1,800 high voltage transformers and a number of substations. And those transformers, as I said before, are 4 to 6 years to replace. and then the substations, you know, so you got to protect all of that stuff. And so this bill puts together a task force that looks at what are the right standards that we will have in Texas for that, and then how to go about prioritizing which ones you're going to focus on first.
And I'd like to know your conclusions to that. But really quick, I just want to show the screen. You mentioned ERCOT. I want to show ERCOT right now. Cranking about, looks like 11 gigawatts right now. And over here, it shows wind and solar, which is a very tiny portion compared to the total.
11 gigawatts is the reserve. So that's the margin we have.
Oh, that's the margin. Oh, okay. But usage looks pretty close to that right now.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, if you look at that, look at over there, you can see it's
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's only 100,000 megawatts.
It's
what?
Yeah, it's 100 gigawatts is what they're going up against there.
So you're saying the reserve is 11 gigawatts?
Yes, it's 10%.
Oh, okay. So, I thought this was real-time usage. So the real-time usage is actually 100 gigawatts roughly here.
Right. Okay. That's what we're using now. August is notoriously, in September, are notorious months for wind. Sun's going down earlier.
Right.
And sun's coming up later, and the wind doesn't always synchronize with it. So that's when we have the brownouts frequently. Then that's when you need battery storage, or you need peaker plants, which are, you know, the gas turbines that are coming on.
But, okay, so this is saying actually wind and solar are currently accounting for almost 40% of the current load. Is that correct?
That is correct, right? Okay. There's times in the day where it does that. And of course, that's
much higher than I had anticipated.
No, it's very big now. Wind in particular, and now there's many projects that are on the books for solar.
Okay. So as you can see here, this is going to show the screen at nighttime. Obviously, the solar goes completely flat, and then this is all wind at night.
Yes. That's when you're counting on the wind to pick up.
And fortunately, that's when HVAC usage is much lower in the summer peak months.
Yes, after 8.
After 8. So those hours between 5 and 8 must be brutal for the grid.
They are. That is the critical time, and that's usually when you get your alerts from your utility, you know, cut back on this.
Okay. All right, great. So thanks for walking us through this. I wanted to explain all that to show people what's happening. So all of this is very vulnerable, is your core message, and we need to shore it up. So what, based on the research that you're talking about, what will be the top priorities to secure the power grid?
Well, there's things that are natural and things that are man-made and are man-caused. And the natural ones, for example, solar flares cause ground currents that can destroy those transformers. So I think highest priority and probably easiest to fix is to go protect us against solar weather.
Okay.
So a storm, there's a number of famous storms that have caused events back in the 1850s. So this is like a 200-year storm. There was a Carrington level event. It's called Carrington. You can look it up, spelled with a C.
Yes.
And that event melted the telegraph lines and caused fires in the telegraph offices. And what happens is there's the ejections from the sun hit our ionosphere, and they start, you know, you see the aurora borealis. It can reach all the way down, as it did last May, the May prior, is where you can see the northern lights in Texas. And sometimes those create currents that are in the crust of the earth, and those currents and voltage discrepancies will try to go up through the high voltage lines, and it'll create a DC current and oscillation in those lines. And that's what causes damage to the transformers.
Yes.
So there are simple capacitor blocking technologies that are out there. They're proven. And they can be put in strategic places to stop those currents from flowing. And they, you know, as soon as you start getting a sensing a current flowing through there, you can shut it off. The cost to do all of the Texas ERCOT grid for that is under $1 billion.
Wow.
So it's very doable.
Yeah.
To protect the whole grid. And then going forward, you can just think of that as kind of an insurance policy, where you're protecting millions and millions of dollars worth of equipment and very long lead times to replace.
And yes. So
I would say that's the number one, not even man-made thing, but a natural caused event that comes. We have solar flares that happen, and we're going to, without a doubt, it's with all certainty, there's going to be one that will knock out those transformers. So take care of that now. It's not a huge amount of money.
Does the wandering magnetic pole and the weakening of the magnetosphere, does that make solar flares more powerful in terms of induction of voltage?
Yeah, the stronger the magnetic field makes a stronger ground current. So you get those strong ground currents up in the northern territories.
Yes.
But you can also have that same ground current occur from a nuclear, high-level nuclear EMP explosion.
Yes.
That drives a bunch of ions into the atmosphere. And those are actually worse at the equator. So when you put in this ground-level protection, and this is called the E3 pulse, it protects against both nuclear explosion and solar weather. And in Texas, that protection really, the southernmost part of Texas, that protection needs to be 85 volts per kilometer.
Huh.
So,
wow.
So if you think of a transmission line that is 100 kilometers long, you've got 8,000 volts going into that transformer.
Uh-huh.
That is DC current. So you can see how that could cause overheating and burnout of the transformer.
Uh-huh. And of course, several nations have the technology to engage in high altitude detonations of
yes.
nuclear weapons with an EMP effect. I mean,
it can
it's
be
a natural
done,
effect of
yeah.
the detonation.
Yes. Yeah. It's been known for a long time. And there's, I mean, the original numbers that came from this were derived by the explosions that were done back in the 60s, and there's a famous one that was done over Kazakhstan by the Soviets, and they came up with what that ground current effect was based on the geomagnetic latitude.
Okay.
So there's latitude, and then there's geomagnetic latitude. They're different. They're depending on the poles.
Sure. Which keep moving.
Which keep moving. Exactly. That's exactly right.
Right.
And the condition and the conductivity of the terrain. So in some terrain it's rock, it's granite. It's not very conductive, you know, and some areas you're near the coast and it's more conductive.
Right. And it seems like an enemy of the United States, and I forgot the name of the report, but there was an EMP report a few years ago that
yep.
predicted a very high percentage of a die-off within, I don't know, 18 months or so following an EMP attack over the continental United States. Do you recall that report?
Yeah. That's the 2017 report. And that you can get a very good, the easy way for your viewers to watch that is just to go to griddownpowerup.com. And that does an excellent job of explaining these different threats and why we're addressing them. There's a big focus on it. In fact, in Trump's first administration, he had a focus. He had an executive order 13865 that really assigned all the different departments, Department of Energy, Department of Defense, you know, actions to go address these threats.
Right.
That executive order is still active, but it's uh-huh. never really got acted on in the Biden administration.
So I think that report, I brought it up, is called the Commission, or it's from the Commission to Assess the Threat to the United States from Electromagnetic Pulse Attack. So I'm
right.
showing it here. Yeah. And I don't recall the exact percentage, but clearly
it's 90%.
It's 90%.
It's a 90% kill rate, unfortunately, within, and it's, you know, back then they were saying it's going to be a year or more to recover.
Yeah.
But the transformers, because power is growing, demand is growing so rapidly all across, you know, the world, not just the US, all these transformers are in very high demand. And
yes.
So the lead time on any of this equipment is very long. Even so, it's not just transformers, but even gas turbines, the lead time is pushing up 3-4 years.
Absolutely. So I've seen that myself because we're building new buildings and you know, Schneider Electric and other providers will tell you, you got to wait till like, you know, 2029 or whatever.
Right.
You're like, what? Talk about Trump's tariffs also, because, you know, Trump has unleashed a 50% tariff against India, which is a nation that manufactures an enormous quantity of transformers, and also tariffs against China and threats, even larger threats of tariffs against China. And China, I think, is the other of the top two transformer manufacturers. So doesn't that just kind of worsen the transformer supply chain for us?
Well, I think it does, but I think that the incentive to build our own utilities, bring them here and build those transformers here, we don't, you know, I think there's only one steel company in the U.S. now that still makes transformer grade magnetic steel.
Uh-huh.
So you want I'll go to the material science piece, but you want grain-oriented steel for transformers. You want elongated grains, so you get better magnetism and more efficiency. Huh. So you'll gain a couple of percent in efficiency in a transformer by using this grain-oriented steel, and
wow,
and that's important. So China has that, and we have only, I think, one manufacturer that is doing that right now in the East Coast.
Right. And so that, I'm sure that manufacturer can't keep up with demand at all. But if Trump is trying to create an incentive for other U.S. manufacturers to come online, because I think the transformer manufacturing business is a very long-term business, maybe 10, 20-year payoff, a business investor or owner would have to have some assurance that these tariffs would stay in place for that extended period of time. And yet Trump tends to, like, he'll throw out a tariff number today and then 2 weeks later, I'm lowering it to 10%. You know what I mean? There's no predictability or permanence from a business investment environment to invest in manufacturing transformers. Does that make sense?
It does. I think the steel part is important, and he definitely has a long-term plan for steel, and the car manufacturers and military, they need steel. So bringing steel back, that's a fundamental thing.
Yes.
The actual winding of the transformers and, you know, the copper that's needed and all the materials and all that can be, I think, protected. It's pretty obvious what the Chinese have been doing all along for the last 20 years, that, you know, they have been securing all of the rare earth minerals and, you know, putting in place really strategic economic blocks to us coming back. So I think the tariffs are one tool. So this is just personal belief. I think the tariffs are one powerful tool to flip that around. Now, with India, I think that's a specific thing. I don't know that the Indian I don't know the situation on India, other than he was very displeased with some of the political stuff that was coming out of India. You know more about that than I would.
Well, yeah, what's interesting about that is that also involves energy, and it was India's purchases of Russian energy that motivated Trump to put the secondary tariffs, which India did not really respond to in any significant way. They didn't say we're going to stop buying Russian oil. So India needs affordable energy, as does Western Europe. I mean, everybody. And so, you know, Trump putting these tariffs on India to punish India for buying energy from Russia is causing America to be unable to build out more affordable energy infrastructure because it relies on Indian parts. That's my point.
Well, I think there was isn't there the rationale is that he's trying to put pressure on Russia to not have the funds to economically continue with the war, prosecuting the war?
Yeah, that's definitely his motivation.
Yeah.
But the idea of secondary tariffs obviously expands that to, you know, India and China, which then affects our supply chains for our grid.
Yeah. Right? Well, I could tell you, China, completely different story. China is, you know, they announced back in the 90s, late 90s, their unrestricted warfare, and they're prosecuting that, you know, they're moving forward with that. And it's very clear in the way that they're, you know, putting all the back doors into the Chinese made equipment. I don't think there's a windmill or a solar farm that can't be turned off or set up that can't be turned off by China.
Well, that's incredibly concerning.
Yeah.
Because then theoretically China wouldn't need an EMP weapon. They could just turn everything off. And we already know the kill rate would be 90% in these affected areas.
Well, that wouldn't take down, you'd have to shed a lot of load, but I mean, we still have a significant amount of base power. It's just they have to build it back up. So that's the reason for gas and nuclear. Let's go back to the SMDs, you know, to accelerate that whole program of small modular reactors. That's very exciting.
Well, I'm a big advocate of the small modular reactors, actually. And there are, several companies in the United States that manufacture those, quite a few, and around the world, a large number of projects. Based on your research, when do you think the small modular reactors, which I think are between 20 kilowatts and 300 kilowatts, typical output, right?
Well, the demonstration ones are down to 1.5 kilowatts, some of them. The bigger ones, the bigger players have, you know, up to 80 megawatts. Megawatts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was thinking way too small. It seems like these don't need the same duration of permitting as a typical, you know, fission nuclear power plant like an AP1000 from Westinghouse.
Yeah.
So the permitting's faster. They're carbon neutral in essence, so the anti-carbon people don't throw a fit over that, right? Or do they?
Yeah, and even more exciting, I think, are some of the fast breeder, neutron breeder reactors that can use spent nuclear fuel, and we have probably 200 years worth of energy in those that spent nuclear fuel, and then out of that, there's a secondary process. You can create a reactor that creates all these radioisotopes that are used in medicines. So
interesting.
For medical treatments. So there's ways to take that. You know, the recent learning for me was that out of that fuel, they've only used 5% of the energy that they could use.
Yeah.
So there's 95 remaining sitting there being stored that you can use for fuel. You don't need the uranium anymore, you know?
Right. And I notice we're not talking, neither one of us are talking about hot fusion because it seems so impossible and so far in the future. We need to focus on things that can be done now.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
What about gas?
Well, you mean gas turbine?
No, I mean, yeah, natural gas as an energy source.
Yeah.
For the gas turbine.
I mean, that's our short-term fast to market, but they need the turbines there to do that. And, you know, have you looked at one of these gas turbines? They're basically jet engines.
You're right. In reverse.
That's exactly right. And so you need a bunch of jet engines made, and to get those turned out fast, that's the critical, ramping up that infrastructure.
Yeah, and once again, you know, somebody that America is financially punishing is the world leader in turbine design and manufacturing. That would be Russia, right? So
are they the leader in turbine design?
I believe so. I mean, we could look it up. I'll look it up. But they have incredible expertise in that area, because think about their own companies like Gazprom.
Yeah.
They built those turbines themselves.
Yeah.
And those are massive. And, you know, they're experts in that. And that's a big export industry for Russia. So I just want to point out, you know, the United States unfortunately gave away too much of its manufacturing base over the past few decades under a lot of policies. And then we arrive at this point where we need to make stuff to have a power grid. And we need the power grid to have abundance, et cetera. And yet we're not good at making stuff anymore like we used to be in the 70s and 80s. And then we have to depend on all these other countries. But then we're in the middle of these kinetic wars and geopolitical wars and economic wars that basically screw up our supply chains for all these things that we need. And U.S. domestic production of these is years out or decades out in some cases. Like, how long does it take to master the production of gas turbines? That's a multi-decade project, you know?
Well, I mean, GE makes gas turbines.
Yeah.
They make them for all that.
That's right.
And, you know, Rolls-Royce does it. And there's a number of manufacturers that have made gas turbines and therefore are, you know, put them on the Boeing engines, put them on the on Airbus. So that manufacturing capability, and then you can't argue that there's not a lot of capacity as far as airplanes go. You know, there's quite a few, and those get remanufactured all the time. So
absolutely, and you're correct. I want to correct. Germany is the largest exporter in the world of gas turbines.
Okay.
So it's not Russia. Russia's on the list, but Germany, Italy, Japan, and China are also at the top of that list. So that's good that it's a little more diverse. We can get it from allies like Germany, as long as they don't realize what we did to Nord Stream. But they're playing along with that for now, so that's okay. Italy, I think we have a 30% tariff on Italy at the moment, or, you know, the EU. So turbines from Italy would be expensive. Japan, oh, dang it, we've tariffed Japan too. So anyway, I'm not going to dwell on this issue, but it's just, seems like we could use,
I think that
a better hand getting the parts we need.
Yeah, there's opportunities to do specific things. When you put it in a tariff, it doesn't have to be blanket across all items.
That's right. You know? That's right.
It can be very strategically designed, so that it advantages manufacturing here and what we need to bring back in for our strategic supply chains.
Yes. Or I'm sure you would agree that the best policy for America would have been 20 years ago have protectionist policies for our domestic transformers and gas turbine industries.
Absolutely. The people in charge were thinking of their own pocketbooks, it seems, and advancing that, and maybe some ideological bents in that whole thing too.
Absolutely. Or the idea that we were just going to be able to always get everything we need from somewhere else because we print the currency and the whole world wants dollars. Well, it's not going to be that way forever.
Yeah.
Okay, no. So let's talk about sabotage and domestic terrorism now.
Yes.
Yes,
with all the coming across the border, I think that has really heightened the urgency on taking action now. So out of this bill in Texas, I could talk about Texas. One of the things they've done is they're looking at centers for cybersecurity and really focused on how to address that in a rapid fashion.
Uh-huh.
So that is getting attention. And, you know, Mike, I think if you, at least my thinking on this is, if the U.S. economy went down completely, 90%, all of that, they would have an equally bad problem everywhere else in the world, in a sense, because because their whole economy, China is not a consumer-based economy. It's a supplier-based economy. And
that's right.
You would have all these job losses. So I don't think China benefits greatly by knocking out the U.S. economy. I think that's a bad play for them. Now, a terrorist, that's a different story. Someone from Iran, that's completely different. But China, I think, can put pain on nation states and has ways to do that, and can certainly put pain on nations that are supplying things to China.
Yes.
You know, they can put pressure on them in a lot of different ways that way. And they certainly have a very large army of cyber people. So that's
absolutely,
that's true. Now, the people coming across the border, did you want to address the physical side?
I do. Actually, that's exactly where I was going, because we've seen, you know, rising domestic tensions. We've seen some interactions between, let's say, illegals in blue cities versus ICE agents, right? Some fights, maybe some gunfire breaking out here and there. It seems like the temperatures are rising domestically, and some of these, you know, radicalized terrorists might want to think that they could hurt. Maybe they can hurt Trump's America by taking out power grid substations.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, I mean, again, if going back to Grid Down, Power Up, that movie, they talk about the Metcalf attack that was in California. Uh-huh. And that was a orchestrated, very well planned hit job with, I guess, AR-15s or AK-47s. They were high-powered rifles that were shooting at the transformers, and they took out the Metcalf, the transformer, large transformer in Metcalf, California.
And what concerns
and they were
me?
In and out. Yep. They were in and out like a military operation.
And were they ever even caught? I don't recall them being caught.
Never caught.
Okay, so
then there was a similar one at Duke. Not quite as I haven't heard it was quite as military operation, but it was in North Carolina, Duke Power, and that happened in 2023, December of 2023.
So several concerns then I have, and thank you for bringing that up. I'm a long range rifle shooter myself.
Yeah.
And so and to hit a transformer, that's a big target. You know, it's pretty easy to put a round on that at 1,000 yards if you don't have crazy wind. So the thing is that people can sit back 1,000 yards and take out these power grid substations if they have a decent caliber rifle, if they know what they're doing.
If you've got line of sight and a view on it.
Right. That's right.
So you can block that view fairly easily and cost effectively with just, you know, I don't recommend
like
chain link
walls.
Fence, but you could put, it doesn't have to be heavy duty walls to do it. You can just put visual blocks in there. All parts of the transformer aren't vulnerable. There are certain parts that are vulnerable and that you have to know what you're doing actually.
Right. Right. And we won't even go there. I wouldn't want to give anybody any crazy ideas.
No.
But I'm just saying that you know, high-powered rifles are fairly widespread in terms of their ownership. The good news is I think most of the people that own rifles are responsible owners, and they wouldn't even dream of this. I've also seen crazy, like, purple-nosed, purple-haired leftists at an AR-15 training range, and they couldn't hit paper at 25 yards. So that's good. that's good news,
but I think the fast answer on that is, I mean, even when you drive through Austin, Texas, you can see you can see everything about the transformer. So blocking those visually is important. You can do something that's fairly inexpensive that just starts taking. Your sheriffs in every county know where these things are.
Yeah.
They can be patrolled. They can block them off. The utility company local in Texas, we have many local community private utilities, and the distribution transformer should be protected. They should be, need to be protected.
That makes perfect sense. Okay. And then there's the drone threat. Now, once you build the walls to block it off, it seems like you could pretty easily put like an anti-drone cage on top, like the Russian tanks do, you know, they drive around with these drone cages. But wouldn't drones then be the next obvious threat?
Yes. Yeah, and I'm sure you know there's jamming technology and things like that, but now you're starting to get into some expensive stuff. And then when you're dealing with high voltages, what you put around something has to actually take into consideration you're dealing with very high voltages.
Right.
You don't want to electrocute people around you.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So how seriously are state regulators taking these warnings right now?
I think they're taking it quite seriously. And that's why when this bill went through Texas, Senate Bill 75, it was 100% voted in by both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and in the House.
I see. Wow.
That's very unusual.
Yeah. I guess everybody loves electricity working. Not surprising. Okay. So if you were to rank then the biggest threats, include natural and unnatural, what are the top three then in your view?
Well, it's certainly cyber. We're constantly being attacked on cyber. You don't read about it, but if you follow, there's the government organization CISA, CISA.gov, has daily reports on all the attacks that go on infrastructure and other things. So you can see that cyber is very real, active, and anybody that's in that field knows they're constantly under attack. It's a big industry.
Right.
And so I would say all of the threats, just ransomware, nation state, anything, all of those are very, very easy to do, easy to hide who did it, and kind of get away with it. Now, if you were to rank to go up the next level, EMP and EMP is, if we're just looking at the man-made events, EMP is possible. In fact, you can get do a pickup truck kind of EMP weapon that's used. So there's actual equipment that they create to test different equipment to see if it's EMP protected.
Oh.
So they're pulse generators, and they can be aimed and they can be shot at, equipment. So
wow. So
being able to protect from EMP is very important. So I didn't really go into detail on that, but there's basically two things with EMP that you have to protect. This ground current that I talked about first, which is also a natural solar weather problem. That's a very slow pulse. That can be anywhere from, a couple of seconds to 20, 30 seconds long. That pulse is called E3. E2 is lightning, and that we're protected against already. They have arrestors and filters that block that. But then there's E1, and E1, everybody's familiar with, your 5G networks and stuff like that. Well, if you look at the frequency of the rise on those curves, those are sub-nanosecond. But an E1 pulse from a nuclear weapon or something like that is in the range of two to 5 nanoseconds that it goes from zero to peak.
Wow.
So those pulses rise very fast, and with just a 1 meter long, a little more than a yard. Those pulses can generate up to 50,000 volts coming into your computer or your electronics devices. So you have to protect that E1 pulse, which is a rapid, short pulse, like a lightning strike. It goes up fast and comes back down. And that's if you've ever worked on computers, you got to be careful not to blow out the memory cards or touch things. You know, you have to be grounded,
right?
All of that. Or when we talk about shielding things. So there's equipment today, the technology has moved in the last decades, there's cost-effective equipment that can shield against that.
Uh-huh.
Siemens is one of the providers that does that. And they have a refrigerator-sized box that you can put your whole entire substation electronics in, run fiber optics in it, and have that sealed and, you know, raised up to not get into floods and to not, to, you know, protect it. And you can have spares of those. And so that's very doable, especially build out on new base load. So when you look at Permian Basin, for example, the Permian Basin project, just the transmission part of that project and then putting in the generation. So that's for Texas, for ERCOT, that Permian Basin project to electrify and put AI and data centers out there in the Permian Basin. That's a $33 billion project. And I did the cost estimate on that, and to protect it from E1 and E3, for that whole project is $40 million. So you're looking at a $33 billion
wow.
project, and it's only 40. I mean, it's a little more than 1,000th of a percent.
Yeah, it would be insane not to add that protection to it.
Right.
Yeah,
that's
clearly.
Exactly right.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time here, Don. I want to give out your website again, or the group site. SecureTheGrid.com is the site. And the organization is Secure the Grid Coalition. And Don, is there anything else you'd like to add today before we wrap this up?
Well, I think that there are things. One of the things I always say is there are issues that are important to independent of politics, you know, and grid security is one of those. So it's. You can always cross the barriers that have been created in society today with conversations around protecting yourself with the grid. So my recommendation is to go to your website in general. You've got a very good preparedness website. I've been through it before and I've used it personally.
Oh, that's great.
And go to your website. So plug that and look at the different kinds of things, get yourself a generator, and become self-sufficient. Have water,
yeah.
Have a water supply, have a filtering system, know where the swimming pools are in your area or where the water supply is in your area, and be sure that you're thinking about, you will lose, you know, when you lose electricity, you lose water, and you should have some basic necessities for the size of your family that you're considerate about. And then just like you would with wildfire, you know, you want your neighbors to be protecting their houses and doing the right things in their neighborhood too. So
exactly.
Don't be afraid of being, you know, being called a survivalist. go do some intelligent things that says, I keep my car with some gas in it, you know, and I'm not always on empty.
Yeah. Right. And the power grid is something that we often take for granted, because when it's there, you don't notice it. When it's not That's there, right. then everything sucks. So
yes, everything's bad very fast.
Yeah. Actually, I think the 2021 near blackout situation in Texas was a really important reminder.
Yes.
I mean, and thank God it didn't get any worse. But yeah. I heat with wood, but I use a wood boiler that circulates hot water, but of course I need power to circulate the water, right?
Yeah.
So I can burn wood, but without electricity,
But I mean, I save a lot by not using electricity to heat.
Yeah,
obviously, well, but I still need it to circulate.
You can still get battery storage systems and you can buy the home battery storage systems and solar panels and keep those in a critical situation. You could charge those up.
I've deeply researched that. I'm waiting for the sodium ion chemistry to go mainstream. I don't like the lithium chemistry. Sodium ion's coming online. There's even a North American manufacturer. I've looked at flow batteries at scale and lots of things. Every technology has horrible failures currently.
Yeah.
For grid shifting.
The lithium iron, phosphate is probably the safest, and that's what's been used in the utilities. But it's heavy, it's not for transportation. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't cycle the way I need it to cycle. And it doesn't work in all the temperature variations very well that everybody expects.
Well, beyond it's Texas. It's better than the consumer based.
That's true. But Canada's got questions, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Don. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I appreciate your time and your expertise. And thanks for joining me. It's been great.
Absolutely.
All right.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That's Don Brown, everybody. The website is securethegrid.com. And get informed, because AI and data centers is bringing on record demand for electricity. It's going to outpace all human consumption or residential consumption in a very short period of time. They're not building offices anymore in America. They're building AI data centers. And they're building them for the machines that use a tremendous amount of electricity. At some point, the competition between you and the robots or the AI is going to become a very fierce debate. Just saying, that's coming. Not hard to see that. Thanks for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here at Brighteon.com. And get your backup generators. The solar generators are offered by one of our sponsors, the Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. And they also offer satellite phones and satellite bandwidth and also EMP protection bags, very large bags. They're called dark bags. And you can even buy one big enough to protect your entire generator with the solar panels inside this bag. So again, that's SAT123.com, or you can just go to BeReady123.com. Either way, and you'll find all kinds of solutions there that can help you stay prepared. Thanks for watching today. I'm Mike Adams of Brighteon.com. Take care.
Your body deserves high-quality vitamin C. Groovy Bee delivers pure, highly bioavailable, non-GMO ascorbic acid you can trust. Feel the difference. Available now at HealthRangerStore.com.